I'm Sue O'Donnell. I've been regularly attending here since the end of July 2017. I'm a professor of psychology at George Fox, and I talk in front of people for a living, kind of. And yet this is more terrifying because I don't usually have to talk about myself. And I've been coming here long enough that I've heard this God tells you to speak thing, and I'm like, yeah, right. And then when Nate first asked for people to tell their story, I thought, I have a story. And then I'm like, no, I don't do that. And then he said it again, and I'm like, no, nobody wants to hear this. Everybody's heard this. And then he said it again. So I emailed Leslie, and I said, I should at least talk about it. And Nate said, yes. And I'm like, I don't know what I have to say that's for anybody else. And Nate reminded me that this isn't for anybody else. This is just my story. So this is my story. I've titled it Strong Alone, Stronger Together, which all of my students know I steal all my best stuff. So I stole this shamelessly from somebody else who stole it from somebody else who I don't know where it comes from originally. I think a video game. I'm not sure. but I'll explain why I chose this title after I tell a little bit of the beginning part. I'm going to start my story back last July. And I've got a picture for you from that. The picture on the upper side is my last wedding anniversary. It was our 25th. God gave me that gift of making it to the quarter century mark. And then, as most of you know, my husband died 26 days later. And this picture is, I title it As Luck Would Have It, and luck has an asterisk because, of course, luck has nothing to do with it. Our kids all came. They said, yes, we will fly to Oregon in the middle of July and or middle of summer and come celebrate your anniversary with you. And that was a lot of fun. And you can tell by the picture that we took out at Chehalem Valley Brewing Company in front of the Arbor Vita in the parking lot that we were a happy group. And we celebrated and we had fun with each other. And none of us knew that was the last time we'd all be together. But we were grateful. And the brothers, one lives in Minnesota and one lives in Arizona, were grateful that they came that last time. Well, Dad was still alive because we gathered less than 2 months later in this sanctuary. And this was the last time I stood up here, was in the bottom picture. And that's the second part of the story, which was when Sam died. Putz died on his birthday. Don't ever do that to your loved ones. I had nobody to call. We'd been so irregular attending church here that most of you had never even heard our names. And I called Lynn from the hospital, and she was on vacation in Sun River, and she called Leslie. And I think literally the first conversation I ever had with Leslie was sitting in the funeral home as she's helping me to put this together. And she assured me that we could have the memorial here and that it would be okay. And it was. And this is the second part, and that's where my story begins, is you guys gave me permission to be part of your body. And you put a funeral on for a man you didn't even know. And I've sat in the back row back there and cried pretty much every week for 22 months. And I still cry. I still cry a lot. My story's in process. It's not over by any means. But I've learned a lot here, and I've been given permission to be part of you, even though I think they call it convinced Quaker, not birthright. I think I get the language right. But one of the most interesting things that happened was during an open worship session on one Sunday morning right before the semester started, and I was freshly bereaved and trying to figure out how I was going to start a school year without, I mean, those of you who know me know I didn't cook. I didn't do anything. I just graded papers. And Sam took care of everything. And I had to learn to cook. I had to learn to balance the chemistry in the hot tub. I still haven't got the crud off the roof, and I don't know what I'm going to do about the garden. But, you know, it will come. It will come. But at the beginning of the semester, I was sitting in an open worship, you know, the time at the end of the service, and Nate came up to the platform and said, "Are all hearts clear?" And somebody stood up and said something that obviously had been on his heart, that I got the sense, and I don't know if I'm right or not because I've never asked, but I got the sense that he'd been reluctant to say it. And it was a message that I don't know what he actually said, but I know what I heard. And what I heard was, you don't have to wait for the thing to be finished before you look for God in it. And that, my students all know I exaggerate. I'm not exaggerating. That changed my life. And that was so important for me to hear. And I don't know who else it might have been for. It might have just been for me. I don't know. But it opened up the possibility for me of saying yes to things when normally, and I think with my naturally introverted personality, I might have just crawled under a hole, into a hole under a rock. But I didn't. I started looking for things. And the next picture that I have is, I had a hard time finding a crater that actually looked deep. This one is actually called The Entrance to Hell, which I thought was a very appropriate name for the crater that I'm using to reflect what my life has felt like for the past 22 months. And I did feel it, and I've described it to many people as a crater in the middle of my life. That one loss took out everything. It took out everything. It took out my sense of self, my sense of identity, who I am, what I do, what I'm about, and why I matter. It took out my support system. It took out the one person in the world who was there for me no matter what. And I have been clinging by my fingertips to the edge of the crater to avoid falling in, because this has been that devastating of a loss. And I've lost both my parents, I've lost grandparents, I have undergone 3 of the 4 worst losses that a person can undergo. I pray to God my daughter is healthy. That's a joke, you can laugh. Thank you. Because I don't know that I could withstand that. And I will tell you that losing a spouse is nothing like anything else. I just can't. And I know there's people who are listening to this who've experienced it. I know that other people have gone through it. And that's one of the reasons why I was like, well, why is my story special? And it's not special to anybody but me, but it is special to me because when I had to go through it, I had a choice. And those of us who've been bereaved often say, people say, oh, you're so strong. Oh, you're so strong. I don't know how you keep going. I don't know how you do this. We say we don't have a choice, but we actually do. We have a choice. And the person who spoke that Sunday gave me that choice, which was invaluable. And so I started to say yes to things. And I did not want to say yes. I wanted to crawl under my bed and cry. I wanted to cry all the time. I did cry all the time. I probably cried more times in class that semester than I have in 18 years of teaching at Fox. But I started looking for the fingerprints and the image of God, and I said yes to things. I said yes to random students who said, can we come over and watch a movie? That's just silly. Why would students want to come watch a movie with me? But instead of saying that, I said, okay, come watch a movie. So I did some things. I've got some pictures here that represent some of the things I've done. I had the Psychology Club barbecue, just like always. Sam always was the one who did the cooking for that. He was the one who thought, hey, remember to put the veggie burgers on the grill first so that they don't cook in the meat juice of the regular burgers. And I'm like, oh, I never would have thought of that. But he did, so we remembered it. So we had the Psych Club barbecue. And we had a new event because I got lonely, I guess, in the middle of Christmas break that year. And I thought to myself, I can't do this. And so I started planning another event. So we now have we've had 2 now. So we've had the second annual Psychology Club brunch at Sue's, where you come over and keep Sue company in the beginning of spring semester. I've had people over for movies. We watched the Marvel movies in order this summer. I couldn't care less about the Marvel movies. That's my deep, dark secret. I watched Infinity War 7 times. But people say, oh, you must really love movies. And I'm like, nope. Nope. But I really love having people over. And I had Survivor. And for those of you who don't know, Survivor's a TV show. It's in its 38th season. We're about to come on the finale this week. We'll watch it on either Wednesday or Thursday. I haven't decided yet if you want to come join us. And I started cooking dinner before Survivor, and people started showing up for Survivor. And I had people over to sit on my deck, and I threw more going away welcome back parties this summer than I have in my entire life. Anytime anybody went anywhere for any length of time, we threw them a going away party and then a welcome back party, and we had people, and different people came to different events, but somebody always showed up. And that's been the theme for the last 22 months. It's not always the same person, but somebody has always showed up. I went to football games. I did. I went to Fox football games, which is, you know, fun. I went to basketball games. Karen went with me once. I went to track meets, which apparently they throw things and run things or something. I'm not sure. Doesn't matter. I've asked the most ridiculous questions, but apparently my students appreciate it when people show up, so I showed up. I did a lot of ticket buying. I bought tickets to stuff well in advance, and then I asked people, will somebody go with me? And somebody always goes with me. Sometimes they buy me dinner since I bought the tickets, but they always go with me. So one of my students went to the state fair with me to see Styx, which if you're old, you know. And my friend Andrea, we took a picture downtown because we could, she went to see a Kris Kristofferson concert with me. That is true love. Because he's a great songwriter, but he's lost his voice. I put my eclipse picture up there because I went and watched the eclipse, and that was like a month, not even a full month after Sam died. And I used his plan, and I used his spot to sit, and I cried all the way back. I cried all the way back from Kaiser because he wasn't there to see it, and he had been so looking forward to it. I took the vacation that we'd planned, and I cried a lot in Honduras, but I went. And I took, on the next slide, I took students to conferences and taught them that they could be professionals and do things. These weren't student conferences. These were international psychology conferences. And I had to push and prod a little bit, but I made them go. On the next slide, this is fun. I replaced the tile in my kitchen, which actually I didn't do. I hired a student to do it. But, you know, there's something to be said for having lost Sam, and there's a part of me that wants to keep everything as a shrine, but the tile hurt my feet. Don't ever put tile in your kitchen. It's a really bad idea. You can't go in barefooted. And I was learning to cook, and I had, anyway, so we replaced it. And pro tip, for those of you who don't already know this, quarter-inch plywood is not rigid. So there's soft spots. But you know what? It's mine. I picked out the color. I picked out the plan. And it's that quarter-inch plywood is on me because I didn't do my research. I learned to cook. I made chili. I used Sam's recipe, and then I tripled the spices, and it's almost right now. I learned to make bread. The picture's tiny because it's really blurry because the bread's not good yet. Somebody told me I should take this summer since I'm not working over this, because, you know, academics don't work in the summer, right? That I should go do an internship at the bakery and learn how to actually make bread. But I'm not sure that that's fair. But I baked cakes. I've baked so many. This is just one of my chocolate cakes, but I've baked so many of those for people because I bake birthday cakes for anybody who wants one now. And then The Pixar cake was my favorite, and I wish you could see it, because Hannah is also bereaved. She lost her dad a year ago, January. And so we've been kind of holding each other's hands through this journey, and she sits on my couch, and I sit, and we talk to each other about how this sucks and how we didn't have a choice and how people tell us we're brave, but we don't feel brave. And she cries, and I cry, and it's good. And then I drove her to the airport to go to Disneyland for her birthday last August. And she got home and she said, "I forgot to eat Pixar cake." And I said, "What is Pixar cake?" So I Googled it. And Pixar cake is red velvet, blue vanilla, and lemon with cream cheese frosting and raspberry puree. And I said, "This sounds amazing." So I made one. I had help. And that's the thing I'm not saying, because that's a different part of the story. I did have to have help. I don't apparently decorate or time, so I need people who can run clocks to help me with this stuff. My daughter got married without her dad, and that was hard, but we did it. And I went to Disneyland twice and learned about single rider lines, which is a thing, apparently, that makes it a whole different kind of ball game. And these are just a bunch of different snapshots of the things I've said yes to, because that is how I've coped. And I don't have much patience right now for lies. I tell the truth a lot. It makes people uncomfortable. But I don't have the bandwidth to lie about things particularly successfully. It kind of leaks through, so I just started going with telling the truth. And I would tell people I need to see somebody, I don't want to be alone right now, and people would show up. And I have texted people and called people and scheduled dinners and done the things that I needed to in order to get through. But because I said yes to things and because I tell the truth, God has been present, and I tell people, and sometimes they're surprised when I say, "I think my faith is stronger through this." I'm not sure it's a worthwhile trade-off, but I think my faith is stronger because my eyes were opened at the beginning to look for God and to see him in the midst of the crater, I was able to. And sometimes when I'm depressed, and I still am depressed a lot, and I sit in my car and cry and stuff that's not particularly helpful, I think maybe I'm just delusional and that, you know, none of this is real. But then something comes. Something happens to remind me that it's not magic. It's just faithfulness, I think. The next picture is my friend Deb. And Deb is somebody that I've known for a very long time. Our daughters danced together at the dance studio, and she works at Fox, and we went to church when I went to Grace together. But we were never that close. We had our families, and we were busy, and that's one of the things that's most interesting about this not having a family all of a sudden is other people do, and it makes it hard. So Deb is the person that I call when I can't talk, when I'm crying so hard I can't get off the kitchen floor. And she's the one who came over, and my husband liked gadgets, and in order to be able to use the kitchen to learn how to cook, I had to get like 2/3 of it out of there. So she helped me box it up and put it in the garage, and then the garage sale came, and it never comes back into the house ever again. And I don't miss any of it. And she hemmed my pants, and she did things for me that I can't even begin to say, just knowing that sometimes I don't even have to call her, just knowing that I can if I need to. Makes a huge difference. The next picture is some of the kids who've shown up. This is Alex. He sharpens my knives. He runs my grill. He did the floor. He did the deck. He waterproofed the deck for me. Just there when I need him. I have Ashton. And Ashton is amazing, among other things. She shared her books with me, and she got me reading again, which was fun. And when somebody shares with you their childhood books, that's a part of them. And I understand the gift that is. Noelle visits me when she comes back to town. Athena visits me when she comes back to town. And that's one of the things that I've noticed is that I've stayed connected with a few of my students, not, you know, overall that many, but a lot have keep showing up. And they keep coming back. So even though they've graduated and moved on, and even though I'm investing in people who are, by definition, leaving, they don't all leave. And it's been an amazing journey seeing how, even though I'm the teacher, I'm learning from them. And I believe that that's because I said yes. Because I didn't used to know them. So, I think the next slide is the, I thought this is one example of the very tangible way God speaks to me. One of my friends tweeted, "Everybody just needs 5 friends who love them enough to take them to the airport. If you got that, you're good." And I'm like, I think I'm okay. And then a half an hour later, my ride to the airport confirmed. And they were right next to each other in time, even though they were different media. And I remember thinking, okay, this is about as clear as it can get. God says he loves me, and he's doing it through rides to the airport and people sitting on my deck and sharing their books and sharpening my knives and keeping me going when I need to be kept going. It's funny because when my daughter was little, I wanted more than anything to be that house in the neighborhood where the kids came over and played. And I just had this vision in my head. I don't know what I was thinking. My husband is even more introverted than I am. So, of course, we gave birth to an introvert who didn't want friends at her house. So I let my dream go. Because you have to parent the child you've got, not the one that you had dreamed up in your head that doesn't actually exist. And so that was fine. She's who she is. She's her own person, and that's as it should be. But now I have the desire of my heart, because now my house is safe, and my couch is safe, and my deck is safe. And I have students who email me and say, "I need somebody to talk to. Can I come over?" And I have them show up on my doorstep in tears. And I just, it's such a gift to be able to give back, because 21 months ago I said, "Yes, God, I will be looking for you." And I think it's the cracked pot where the light shines out through the cracks. And I think that since I lost Sam, people see a kindred in me that allows them to know that I am safe. And it's maybe not actually my deck or my couch or my living room that's safe. It may be me. I'm not sure. This is church, so I had to have a scripture, right? Oh, it's a little small. Usually I'm better at that than at font size. I guess it's big enough on your side. God comforts us in all our troubles so that we can comfort others. When they are troubled, we will be able to give them the same comfort God has given us. And I think that's an interesting verse for me right now, because it's not, "I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me," and it's not, you know, any of the lament verses. It's hopeful. It's ultimately hopeful. I'll be honest, I spend most of my life scared. I'm terrified. I hate being alone. For an introvert, it's a little bit weird. But it's the existential alone, not the physical alone. I'm scared pretty much all the time. But he keeps coming back. So I titled this "Strong Alone" because I did have a choice. I could have curled up. I could have quit. I could have not shown up, and I didn't. And I'd had a choice, so I stood up. And I said rude words in my head that I won't say. But people tell me I'm strong, and I don't feel strong. People have said to me, "You're so strong. I'm so impressed." And I'm like, I don't feel strong. But when I saw the phrase strong alone, stronger together. That made more sense to me than me saying I'm not strong, because actually I am. I'm a tough old bird, as they say. This is not going to beat me. But I'm stronger with the people that he has sent me. And I do believe that if I had curled up, I wouldn't have ever seen them. And I would be alone, a lot more alone than I am now. So you saw the list of things I did. It's not ending. I'm going to Indonesia this summer, and I'm going snorkeling, and I'm going to go see Komodo dragons. So we shall see how that works out, if I get eaten by a dragon or not. Or a shark. I want to snorkel with sharks. The last picture is from Easter. Oh, last two pictures, sorry. I put the picture with the Nerf gun up because I am actually laughing, and that I think was the first time I full on laughed. So that was symbolic, and nobody was injured in the Nerf war in the psychology office. I put the picture from Easter up because my grouping is always different. There's different people who come in and go, but this is people that are part of my army. They're part of my, I don't know, lowercase f family, I guess, the people who are there. And this was, it was important that people came. The last picture I stole off the internet. I probably should attribute it. I will have to go and cite myself for plagiarism or something. This is how I feel most of the time. And the previous picture with the Easter is how I'm trying to feel. It's how I'm trying to get to. So I'm way out of time. I didn't know if I'd have enough to say. Apparently I did. I will stop, but I just want to say that it's my story. I don't know if it works for anybody else. I don't know how other people do. But truth-telling, I highly recommend it, even if it's hard and awkward and people don't always like it when you tell the truth, because we're so used to saying, I'm fine, how are you? It took me a good year and a half before I could even fake those words. People would say, how are you? And I often say, I take the fifth. Sometimes I still do. But I don't lie to people, and I highly recommend that as a coping technique. And then say yes when people ask you stuff, even if it seems weird, like watching Marvel movies with your students. So, thank you.